Discover the life-changing benefits of Meow Greens for your cat. Ever see your cat slowing down or having health issues and wonder, what can I do to make them better? Well, my friend, add Meow Greens to your cat's food for 90 days, and I guarantee you'll see changes that will amaze you. Greetings, I'm naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black, inventor of Meow Greens, and I invite you to take the Meow Greens 90-Day Challenge. In the first 30 days, you'll see shinier coats and increased energy. By day 60, your cat will have a stronger immune system, less shedding, improved joint function, all due to the live nutrients that you've added to their diet. And at 90 days, they're going to have better digestion, reduced inflammation, improved heart health, and you may even have reduced their cancer risk. Fetch a free Jumpstart trial bag for your cat today. Go to trymeowgreens.com. Use promo code TRYMEOW. That's try M-E-O-W. You discover the shipping. You don't have to change your cat's food to improve your cat's health. Just add a packet of Meow Greens.
This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 310 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. And now, on to our read-along. This week, we are discussing multiple chapters of The Fiery Cross. Read along, beginning with chapter 45, entitled, If It Quacks. I feel like this is about a duck.
I mean, it
better be.
It figuratively.
What else quacks?
A duck.
Exactly.
Well, something figurative ducks.
Figurative ducks only figuratively quack.
And we left the sleeping Betty at the end of chapter 44. And she's still sleeping or something. 2 hours after being discovered by Jamie, she's still asleep. It is now 3 p.m. and there's an hour left before the wedding. Jocasta and...
Duncan?
What's his name?
Duncan,
like the D. Who's not Daniel? Jocasta and Duncan.
The D were who's going not to be a D.
Yes. Jocasta and Duncan will be married privately in her... I wanted to do like shorthand... Because I sometimes write like J for Jamie, C for Claire, and whatever, and it just made me laugh when I said it in my head. I'm like, oh, I got to write that out. So I'll just say what I wrote. Jocasta and Duncan would be married privately in her booty.
Did you say booty?
I said in her booty.
Nope. Are you thinking like a short form for boudoir?
Yes.
Fired. You still said booty, and they're not inside her booty.
They're in her booty.
Nope.
B-O-U-D-Y.
Nope.
Then, after they were married, they would present themselves as newlyweds to their peeps, and then they'd get all...
Which was a real super convenient way of hiding the fact that they had, like, a Catholic priest in her bedroom.
Everyone knew he was there. It wasn't a secret.
It was a secret to the people who it needed to be a secret from.
No.
Obvi. They just...
It doesn't say anything about that in the chapter. In the chapter, it says, and in the previous chapters, when the priest arrived, it was public. It wasn't a celebration.
But it's the whole reason they didn't have the wedding at the big gathering, because there were soldiers there.
And the priest was arrested. They couldn't get
right,
the
priest. Because he was a priest. I'm just saying, the whole thing, and they were not pushing it out there. That's how I took it.
They weren't pushing it out there the previous time, but the priest was captured. The difference was that... This priest, no, he was in, he's still in North Carolina. There was a difference. Maybe the same people who did the whole arresting weren't there, but he wasn't. Okay, he wasn't. What's the word? Not floundered. He wasn't
flouting.
Yeah, he wasn't flaunted. Right, like they didn't take him out and say, "Hey, everybody, meet the priest." No, but everyone knew that they're Catholic. That's not a secret. Everyone knew it was a priest in the ceremony. There's no secret. They did it in the privacy of her room, in her booty, to.
Stop it. They were not inside her booty.
We're in her booty, and that's the title.
No.
In Jocasta's booty.
No.
Yes. They did it to out of I even wrote it down somewhere. I didn't write it down. I read it.
Yeah. Well, you also put down that they were in her booty and they were not in her booty.
I didn't write this down. I read it. They did it for the sentiments of their of the Protestant crowd, because most everyone
was Protestant. So they did it all for her booty?
No, they didn't do it. I didn't say that.
It was implied.
So Claire is on her way up to the attic room to check on Betty for herself. Ulysses is there. And so is Dr. Fentiman. He's bleeding Betty. And he's using a scarificator. I'm like, oh, we need to look that up. Hold on a sec.
I mean, it's clearly a sharp thing.
Exactly. But I want to say...
it cuts into her and allows her to bleed.
I don't want to, there's like videos, like I don't want a video. Actually, I don't mind seeing a video of like a medicine box, but I don't want to see anybody using it. Hold on. Okay. Antique scarificator. Whoa. Case set. Franz Rauch in Wien, 1844. The bloodletting cupping therapy. Let me turn the sound off and see what
Franz. Like a video with sound?
It's a video, a YouTube video showing or a Bing video. No, it's YouTube showing this medicine chest, and they're just kind of it's panning over it. It's like bottles, and I don't even know, but they're not pointing out the scarificator. Bloodletting.
Just assume it's the sharp thing that they cut into.
There's
her
a few sharp things. Okay, that's not helpful. Let's find another one. Let's go images. Oh, that's weird. It's like it looks like a something you put coins in has slots, and out of the slots come.
What?
Out of the slots. Come, I'm guessing the sharp needles, but it, like, I don't even know. It's weird.
Yeah. I just like to assume it's some sort of a scooping knifey thing. And
it's not. It's got.
It's cool. I don't need to know.
Oh,
it's a sharp thing. It's going to cut her with it and bleed her.
He cut her in some way. Yes. Yep. So a scarificator. Ulysses announces Claire as she comes in, and Dr. Fentiman, he's heard of her. He bows somewhat or fake politely, and she can tell he's been drinking, and she smells the gin. Like, oh, so now that we've like completely made it clear, or I have anyway, that gin is just not my friend. Well, it's not necessarily an enemy. It just tastes like arse. Whenever I mean, like, I don't even, I could never
most
get drunk
alcohol
on gin.
Doesn't taste good.
Well, whiskey like burns.
Itself.
Whiskey burns. Don't get me wrong. Even the best whiskey burns. But girl, it does not taste like booty or Jocasta. I'm sorry. That's funny. He'd been drinking and she smells the gin. Claire sees Betty. She has an ashy cast to her skin. So rather gray. And she sees that after he'd cut her, that her blood had begun to clot. So that's a good sign. She's definitely still alive, and she can tell she's breathing regularly. And Dr. Fentiman didn't, she could tell looking into his bag, he didn't clean his blades. She, now that she'd been there for a few minutes, she smells what Betty had, but they couldn't discern its exact constituents.
I mean, to be fair, from the previous chapter, it sounded like she'd had all the things.
Pretty much. They work to out-insincere each other. Like, she's fake and he's fake and back and forth. She sees that he is attentive, even though she, you know, he's of his time. Really can't blame him. He doesn't wash his stuff. He wants to bleed her. Like, again, that's all of his time, right? She does admit to herself or recognize that he is attentive to slaves, to whites, to whoever his patient is. He is attentive. And he says that he'd administered an emetic. And pretty soon after that, Betty barfs.
As you do.
She now smells rum and brandy and a hint of what she believes is opium.
Legit. Gross. Like, to be able to smell all of those things from vomit.
Bleh.
No thanks.
Claire asks him some questions as she begins to examine Betty. Like, she goes and looks at her eyes, feels her pulse. And Fentiman's like, what the F? Get out. He asks for her to be taken out. And Ulysses starts to, like, go toward her, but he's, like, hesitating. She's so upset at this dude that she just turns around and leaves. She's going down the stairs, and Jamie's there, and She can't even talk. She's like, that, blah, blah, blah. Well, no, she has a few things to say, but Jamie fills in most of it. He fills in her blanks. He gives a lot of great.
Fills in her blanks. Shame on you.
What? Summer. I was thinking that. Shame on you. She pauses and he fills it in.
Don't pause too long or Jamie's going to fill your blank in.
One of the blanks he filled with Unsanzi Sharg. Like, I don't even know what that is, but I want to look it up. Let's look it up. Unsanzi Sharg. Oh, it came up. Holy. Not charger. Wait, did I do that wrong? How do you spell it? S-H. No, that's right. Okay. Da, 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 da. Bum, bum. Okay, what is Unsanzi? Nope. I don't want to unionize people. Sanzi, what is that? That sounds... Here we go. Oh, Sanzi is like strong and healthy. So Unsanzi would like be maybe unhealthy. And then what is a Sharg? Nope, it's not a newspaper in Iran. Here we go. Sharg. Come on, dictionary. Oh, here we go. Sharg, also blah, 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 to argue fractiously, carp, cavil, speak on in a peevish, grumbling way to nag, grouse. So an unhealthy nag, maybe? Nagging, grumbling, petulant, persistent, complaining, or teasing. Also, figuratively, anxiety, vexation, harassment. Or probably this one. A nagger, grumbling, factious person. Yeah, that's cool. So, yeah, pretty much, Jamie. Yeah, pretty much. Jamie wants to know how he's like, look, how can I help? Shall I defend you? No, shall I go, like, split him, gill to gill? And she's all, nah. Jamie has sent Roger and Bree to see. He tells her that he has sent Roger and Bree to see if any other guests are a la mode de Betty. And Jamie will do the same regarding the slaves. He'll go check out and see if the slaves or any other slaves are a la mode de Betty. And Claire will go up to Betty again once Dr. Fentiman leaves. She apologizes again regarding Wiley. And Jamie says, not to worry, quote, I shall settle with Mr. Wiley by and by, unquote. So he's got, if not plans, he has not forgotten.
Forgets. He never forgets anything. Moving on to chapter 46, entitled Quicksilver.
The wedding was a success. En français, in Jocasta's booty. Duncan had been tweaked.
No more booty.
Roger and Bree were in attendance and had been swarmy. And even Jamie and Claire were slightly swarmy. After that, it was time for the celebrations and the eating. Martina P. writes, I'm not quite sure why Jocasta's and Duncan's wedding was conducted in French. I understand the privacy of the ceremony, namely not to offend the Protestant guests who are clearly in the majority. I am sure Jamie does not need to draw attention to his Catholicism either because of the land grants from the governor. You know, that's a good question. Or good point. I don't think it had to be done in French. I think the priest spoke French. So they went with it. What do you think?
If nothing else, it was convenient. But I mean, who cares what the priest spoke? They were in her booty.
Yes, for privacy purposes. But what I'm saying is
all booty stuff should be in private.
The marriage was conducted in privacy out of respect for the guests. It could have been done in Swahili. It didn't matter. All they needed to say was yes and no. They know what the lines are. She's been married enough. And Jamie probably picked up Swahili 5 minutes ago, okay? So, but the priest came from Louisiana or somewhere around there. I think New Orleans, but I could be wrong. But he came from a French territory. And so he had enough. Remember last chapter or a few chapters ago, he understood because of its Latin root. He understood scrotum.
He understood scrotum? What? Did you just say that?
Yes.
Is that what you just said?
You don't remember that chapter?
It's been a while.
Jocasta and Claire are in her booty and the priest is there.
I mean, they were talking. Oh my God, no more booty. I know that Jocasta and Claire were talking about Duncan's inability to achieve an erection.
In front of the priest.
But I don't recall scrotum being part of the conversation because scrotums have nothing to do with erections.
And they do if it's injured and you, for some reason, can't get it up. It may not be related, but that was the whole discussion. Claire
they're always present.
Claire was
but
tasked
they don't always have anything
with
to
talking
do with
to Jocasta about the issue because Jocasta didn't know. And they did it in front of the priest. And they weren't afraid of, about doing that because the priest spoke French and little to no English. However, in the description of the issue or the problem or the injury, Claire mentioned the word scrotum. That got the priest's ear notice because it has a Latin root. It sounded like Latin. And there's not a lot of other words that use scrote. So he,
scrote,
he
you're
was
fired.
He was like, oh, are we talking?
It all just translates to sad penis.
Are we That's talking it. About scrotum? And he's talking to Claire in French saying, oh, is there a problem with the mariage? Whatever. So, yeah. So that shows that not that he speaks English, but that he understands or hears Latin roots.
Speaking of Latin roots, just more about sad penises. Go ahead.
So I think, so anyway, the reason that the wedding was conducted in French is because the priest spoke French, I believe. So Betty was still comatose. No one else had been found poisoned, though. Well, if indeed she was poisoned, no one else had been found between Jamie and Claire and Roger and Brianna. They had found no one else who was inebriated or passed out to the extent that she was.
No, and they won't until Betty wakes up so they can ask her more questions. Or ask her questions, period.
Now be careful whenever you read such a line from Diana. Quote, Jamie felt pleasantly light, relieved of responsibility, and ready to turn his mind to recreation. Unquote. In the words of Lin-Manuel's Hamilton, just you wait. That was the wrong key and notes, but just you wait. How's that?
It's okay. The it completely broke up in the middle of your phrase, so it was better for all of us.
It broke up?
On my end. I didn't hear all the
oh,
things.
Oh, you didn't hear it. Okay. Ha! Don't worry. It'll be on the final. It'll be in the final recording.
You spend one third of your life in sheets. Don't you want them to be insanely comfortable? Brooklinen makes it possible to get amazingly luxurious sheets at home for an even more amazing price.
Brooklinen was the first direct-to-consumer bedding company, meaning they work directly with manufacturers and directly with customers. No middlemen, just a great product and service.
Mix and match over 25 colors and patterns to make your bedroom just right. I got mine in graphite and steel Oxford stripe to perfectly complement my charcoal-themed bedroom.
My Brooklinen sheets are so comfy, I don't want to get out of bed. They are smooth. I mean, some days, a lot of days. They're smooth and soft, and I love that they go with my bedroom decor, which is, I mean, it might sound boring, but it's easy as heck to clean. And to buy stuff for. It is white.
Bleach is my friend. My Brooklinen sheets are the best, most comfortable sheets I've ever slept on. And their towels have turned my bathroom into a spa. I couldn't recommend them more for friends, family, or treating yourself to an upgrade you deserve. Brooklinen.com is giving an exclusive offer to just our listeners. Get 10% off your first order and free shipping when you use promo code Outlander at brooklinen.com.
Brooklinen is so confident in their product that all their sheets, comforters, and towels come with a lifetime warranty. The only way to get 10% off your first order and free shipping is to use promo code Outlander at brooklinen.com. That's brooklinen.com, promo code Outlander.
Brooklinen. These are the best sheets ever.
Jamie heads off to find his wife and her split peach.
Stop it.
It's straight from the book. I don't make this up.
I don't care. Sometimes you do.
No. Booty, yeah, it's a shortening.
Like,
but
booty. No. It's a choice that you made.
That's true. Jamie goes on. He finds his wife. And he
and
he's
her
talking
split
to
peach.
Her.
You grossy. Gross.
And he goes on about how he likes to okay, he sees her from afar. He finds her, but he doesn't go up to her yet. And we get this from his POV, or at least the description from his point of view. And he goes on and on internally about how he loves to bang his wife while she's intoxicated. They make eye contact, and Jamie diddles his wine glass to her, and she gets it. But then he's called away by a Mr. George Lyon. Jamie and George stroll to have some privacy, and they end up at the paddock. Lyon wants, he's describing something not very well, and Jamie's like, ah, okay, he wants to blackmail me or something. Lyon remarks about the king depending on the Highlanders, and wasn't Jaime related to young Simon Fraser? Well, yes, but Jaime isn't spilling his guts out for him. When chatting of the horses, Lyon mentions that he'd been in Holland and met Jared Fraser, Jaime's cousin. And then he links this to Jaime and a family talent for alcohol, and thus Jaime's whiskey. Is it a talent for liquor in the fam? Then he comes to this point. Lyon has heard about his whiskey dealings, and he wants to partner with him to help distribute his whiskey. Jaime cuts him off. He doesn't have anything near that type of supply. And in the end, he walks away. Now he has another person to keep an eye on, this Lyon. He wouldn't work with Lyon, but now that he had this conversation, it gave him an idea of other possibilities, and he actually might look into it himself. Maybe do something with Fergus, or there's another one mentioned. It wasn't Ian. Ian's gone.
No, it's like he got a great idea from somebody. Yeah. Even if he didn't want to do business with him, he's like, oh, I could do that
keep
with somebody
else. Family. Yep.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. He finds Claire and they chat about the lavishness of the celebration. And then he gets her with liquor, even more lubricated. Subsequently, feeling slightly reckless, Claire removes some lace from her hair and making some curls fall down. And a man sucks in his air behind her, shocked. Wow.
Oh, she was all ready to
jump him.
Make something happen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now we understand why Jaime is thinking Philip about Wiley. Banging his wife when she's intoxicated. Just as he was about to do the duty.
That wasn't a word you just said.
Intoxicated?
You said intoxicated. It's not the same
just
thing.
Just as he was about to do the duty of with his wife, Wiley comes to visit. He proposes some gambling. Jaime says yes. Claire's not happy. And she's like, you don't have anything to like.
No, here's the thing. She's not happy because not because he wants to gamble, but because it's all about jealousy. One, he's only wanting to best Philip Wiley at this point. And Jamie's like, give me all your things. Well, we don't have anything to put up for whatever. Give me your things. Of course he did.
No, but she goes,
but
take them both.
The point is like, no, she, of course she does. She's like, screw you. There's value in both of these things. And if you're going to take the one, you're going to take them both. And I don't blame her for that. Cause that's like, that's really dickish because it's like, if he'd just been like, give me your and my wedding ring to put up for what is it? Like
whist.
No, not whist, not the game, but collateral. That's what I wanted.
Stakes.
Give me our wedding ring to put up for collateral for a stake. But he didn't want their wedding ring. He wanted the other wedding ring. And while he's not wrong, gold has a higher value than silver. The gold has a much higher emotional value to Claire than the silver does. Because the silver value still exists. You know what I mean? Because she still has Jaime.
I don't think the gold is more meaningful to her than the silver. But along with what you said, yes, what the gold represents is completely lost.
Yeah.
Not just Frank, but her entire, like her, all of her past.
Yeah. And if here's the thing, if she loses the silver ring, she still has Jaime at the end of the day, right?
Yeah.
Whereas if she'd been in the future and she'd lost her silver ring, she'd be much more upset about it then too. So, I mean, when she had Frank, the loss of the gold ring was less dear. Whereas when she's with Jaime, the loss of the gold ring is more dear because she no longer has any connection to that part of her life anymore.
So after she gives him both rings, she walks away.
Love it.
Martina P. writes, this chapter begins in Jamie's POV, and this is my favorite place to be in the Outlander books. It does not happen very often, but when it does, I love it immensely. Just to get a quick glimpse at his inner thoughts is very fascinating to me. Jaime very lustfully is trying to finagle a private rendezvous with his wife, whom he has been observing very closely. I love how we get more depth about Claire when he is thinking about her. He is fantasizing about their possible sexual encounter, and he loves it when she is tipsy and doesn't look out to please him, but getting her pleasure as well. I just cannot get enough of Jaime and Claire's romance. It is the best love story I have ever known. Such passion and love, so beautiful. Sigh, such a blessing to both of them. Who else thinks about the scene in Master Raymond's apothecary when they talk about Quicksilver? It separates easily and reunites just as well, like Jamie and Claire, two drops of Quicksilver. And finally, Jamie and Claire's romantic plans will not come to fruition because Jamie needs to defend his honor and join Willip Filey. That was a first. Spoonerism. Jamie and Claire's romantic plans will not come to fruition because Jamie needs to defend his honor and join Philip Wiley and other gentlemen in a game of cards. Jamie has nothing of value to bring to the table, so he requests the gold ring from Claire. This must have been quite difficult for Jamie, as he is usually very sensitive to Claire's attachment to the memory of Frank. Claire is pretty upset and gives him his own wedding ring as well and storms off.
And that was chapter 46. Now we will conclude this week's read along with chapter 47, entitled The Lists of Venus. And if you haven't listened to the audiobooks, this chapter alone gives a lot to help you experience how beautiful of an experience it is to listen to Davina Porter. Just in the fact that she has the song, Clementine. Oh, my darling, yeah. The Clementine song. She sings it in both Brianna's voice and in Roger's voice, and they sound completely different, but equally beautiful. So if you get a chance, please go listen to that.
Roger goes looking for Bree. His throat was feeling okay after all that singing. He'd learned a few new songs, and he's going out looking for her, she looks up and sees him. And they're talking about, you know, his singing, and he's fishing for compliments, and that's kind of funny. They go off together, Brianna with a snack, and Roger having gotten... I didn't write this easily, but it's like it almost just rolled off my tongue. Like, that's not good. So Brianna with a snack and Roger having gotten a sleigh boy to bring him some wine and glasses. I always feel
with a snack. She took a whole tray.
Oh, she did?
Like, she took an entire tray from Joshua. Like, Joshua had a tray of savories and she's like, can I have some of those? And he takes like it was like a cloth that he had over it. And he was like, yeah, you're welcome to anything I have. And she's like, I'm going to take the whole thing. Like, it was a tray full of savories, and she took the whole thing. And then Roger says, hey, can you bring me some wine and some goblets? And he went and got a wine and two glasses. So, I mean, it was funny.
Bree had found out through her questioning that Betty was a usual tippler at parties. So this was not necessarily, like, this degree might have been a lot, but this was not uncommon for her to do.
What else is she going to do? The FabFitFun Fall Box is on sale now. Don't miss out on your chance to receive a curated lifestyle subscription box full of what are sure to be your new fall favorite things. And each box can be customized to your specific interests.
What better way to treat yourself or others as you transition to the cozy vibes of fall? There is just something about arriving home from a long day of work to see that FabFitFun box waiting for you on your doorstep. You just know magic is about to happen.
Many of the items are customizable. This box, I went with an adorable Kate Spade lunch tote. It was like they had peeked at my busted lunch tote and picked this particular item just for me.
I loved the Harper and Ari Juice Cleanse Exfoliating Sugar Cubes. They smell divine, and they leave your skin so soft and smooth. And your FabFitFun membership goes beyond the box itself.
In addition to the box, members gain access to members-only flash sales, exclusive content from experts like Venus Williams, Giada De Laurentiis, Jillian Michaels, and so many more.
And members receive access to on-demand videos from FabFitFun TV. FabFitFun is a seasonal subscription box with full-sized beauty, fitness, fashion, and lifestyle products. It retails for $49.99, but always has a value of over $200.
Use coupon code OUTLANDER for $10 off your first box at www.fabfitfun.com.
That's right. To get $10 off your first box, enter coupon code OUTLANDER at fabfitfun.com. They make their way to a bench under some willow trees in privacy and darkness. Roger pours some wine and they clink glasses or cheer or whatever, toast to beauty. If I'm not mistaken, that's what Jamie and Claire toasted to in the last chapter. Wasn't it to beauty? Maybe I'm off my head, but it sounded familiar. Brianna remarks that she had not had wine since their first wedding night. They chat a bit as she, not completely disrobed, but begins to like undo her stays and undo the laces at the back. She's conscious about contraception, but he's all, you took the seeds, right? You're good. I'm like, well, if things had gone a different way or, yeah, if he had had a different plan, I would have been like, Roger, that's a D move. Uh-uh. But
no, but he was reminiscing about how much he would wishes he could have a condom. Like honest to God condom.
Completely. So he kisses her and says, we don't have to go all the way. It's all good. And she suckles him and he is just about to diddle her when, hold that thought, Lorraine writes, this chapter starts off with a lovely glimpse into Brie and Roger as a couple. Both were off enjoying themselves at the wedding, not feeling like they had to be together all the time, and both cherishing reconnecting. On their way to a secluded spot, Brie stops a slave bearing a tray of savories and pinches it. She chows down on mushroom pasties and scotch eggs. For Christmas last year, my husband gave me the Outlander Kitchen Cookbook. I've read through all the recipes but have yet to make any of them. Reading this chapter has inspired me. I love how Roger is a thoughtful, caring lover and husband. Quote, a sudden thought had come to him, prompted by that entry in her dream book. Unquote. He means to remedy the fact that his wife has never experienced an orgasm at his hand. One of the songs he'd committed to memory that evening had described a gentleman's exploits, quote, in the lists of Venus, unquote, and he was determined to be on it, quote. Maybe she couldn't describe it, but he meant to make sure she knew it had happened, unquote. But the best laid plans of mice and men, or more to the point, of mothers and fathers, oft gang eggly. Back to the scene. Just as he starts to do those things, Phaedra interrupts them. Jemmy had woken up hot and was fussing with a cough. And Dr. Fentiman was on his way. They're like, no. And it was all Roger could do to keep up with Brianna as she's running back to the house. Roger finds Bree and Jem in Jocasta's booty. She asks Roger, please find Claire. Find Mama. He rushes out only to almost run into her. Claire is there and all will be well. She confirms that he's got the croup and she says, to the kitchen and to a croup tent. So as Claire is prepping to give some sort of meds to Jem, Joshua, a groom, comes in asking for her. A man had been accidentally shot. Apparently people outside in drunken celebration had been shooting into the air like, oh, this is nothing new. And someone had been shot. She gives Roger the meds for Jem and then goes after Joshua. Roger and Bree stay in the tent with Jem. Roger mentions Claire's missing rings. Like, oh, I wonder what happened to her rings. And Brianna's like, what are you talking about? And he said they were not on her hand when she gave me these meds.
Well, I mean, Claire had a very short guest starring appearance in this chapter. Like, she literally shows up, rolls up a piece of paper, sticks it to her ear, and listens to Jemmy's chest. And then it's like, poof, gotta go. He's fine. Camphor. And like ran out.
Exactly.
Exactly. And she's like, you got this, Roger. Pour this in the water and put him in the tent. You're cool. So
Bree and Roger are hanging out in the tent waiting for Jem for his cough to break up and for him to feel better. And so they're like sweating, like, cause it's, you know, boiling water in there with the camphor and they're, mm-hmm. you know, his shirt's getting wet and he's like, he's actually very conscientious of him for a dude. He's like, hey, honey, why don't you go put a shirt on or something old so that you don't ruin that dress. Cause I think it was silk and it was expensive, but it was also new.
And I'm sure he's heard a lot about how expensive fabric is, like just in being there and the time that he's been there.
Yes. And so he's like, nah, he kind of puts his foot down. And I think this was, and it was a good thing. It was
she tried to stay, but then they made the mistake of saying Bobby. And then the baby was like, Baba, bring me my Baba.
Oh, yeah. So he tells Brianna to go take off her new dress and then to come back. And it's hilarious how the accidental mention of Jem's Baba makes him only want that. And Roger, to try and not only get Jem to fall asleep, but also to take his mind off of the Baba, is singing or continues to sing.
Bree started
the Clementine. Yeah. And as Wee Gem begins to nod off or has fallen asleep, he thanks God, the universe, anything and everything. And he ends with, "Oh, my darling Clementine," or something along those lines.
I mean, that's the words.
Lorraine writes, "I had to look up this word, chivalry. It means a noisy mock serenade to a newly married couple." That's very specific.
Well, if you think about it, that used to be a thing. Like, if I don't know if you remember, but our parents, I mean, we weren't there, but our parents, it used to be a big thing among like wedding goers that the bridal party used to totally prank the wife and groom, either kidnap them. I think that our parents had like a
weren't the place they were staying wasn't like broken, not broken into, no, but it was like
they had like a camper. And they like stole the camper. Like there was, it was the thing, and maybe it's a thing among people who are not super well off that they just prank each other, but it was a thing in society that they would prank the bride and groom. So I don't know. Obviously, I don't think it's a thing. But then they do it in Oklahoma, like in the movie, not the movie, the musical Oklahoma.
The movie. Hey, there was a movie.
Probably
a musical.
Both, but that was another thing in Oklahoma. You don't remember that?
I do.
Just me?
Lorraine continues. Roger muses about how, quote, "everyone is up at the house, dancing, drinking, and planning a later serenade of the wedding pair," unquote, and how he'd heard about a chivalry and would have loved to see one performed, but was more interested in being with his wife. He has a plan, and it's way more important than being a historian.
It's all about Leo. And that was chapter 47. Join us next time when we will be discussing chapters 48 through 52. And that's 48 is Strangers in the Night, 49 In Vino Veritas, 50 Blood in the Attic, 51 Suspicion, and 52 A Hard Day's Night. And if you'd like to join us to continue the conversation, please join us at www.outlanderpod.com/groups.
And there you'll find our Facebook community and help support content you believe in that was created just for you, our dear Outlander fan friends. Support us on Patreon to find out more. And we have just ordered. We just added two more bonuses. One, like, forever bonus, like something if you're a patron, you automatically get it. But one is like a short time because it has to do with helping us out with an upcoming interview. So go become a patron and check it out. Find out more at patreon.com/outlanderpod. Thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.